hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts Jacob Cazell, Jeff Chaney, and Todd Singer.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. This is episode 92. I am your co-host, Jacob, and with me are my other co-hosts, Jeff and Todd. Todd, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Dodging the raindrops here this weekend, but besides that, I'm feeling pretty good.
Awesome. And Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
You know, I kind of wish the Olympics would be over already because I have been staying up way too late and then being a zombie in the morning. I'm done. It's got to be over anytime now. We've seen nice. The swimming, and I think they're doing some track, and then just be done. Like, nobody else cares about any of the rest of it. Be done, because I gotta start going to bed before midnight. It's just not working out for me. But other than that, I'm great.
You know, you can go to bed before they're over, right?
No, you can't. You cannot. Yeah. And they put the stuff that everybody...
Trust
easy
me.
Easy for you to say. they put the stuff that everybody wants to see on at like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
I know. That's why I go
to bed.
And
then you got to stay up.
It just pisses me off. I'm just like, screw you guys. I'm going to bed. Oh, well.
It only happens every 4 years.
I know.
How are you not going to know who's the best? USA. USA.
I read it the next day on
That's not
the
as good.
Interwebs. It kind of is, actually, because those announcers are freaking stupid.
I suppose. Now, I am surprised at how handy of a lead we have over all of the other countries. Like,
are you really?
I a little bit. I mean, because it's not even close. I was just looking at the medal totals. And as of the time we're recording this, the United States has 67 total medals. The next closest country is Great Britain with 38, and then China way back. Wait, this isn't in order at all.
No, it's not, because China's number two.
It's gold. It's gold. China still only has 45. So we have 20-plus medals on China, 22 medals on China, and almost double the golds.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they have state-sponsored mandatory athletics.
Did you hear the thing that if Maryland were a separate country, the state of Maryland.
Like the state of Maryland. Huh?
Were a separate country, they'd be third in medals right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
what is that? Like, what is making us medal so freaking much compared to the rest of the world?
We have better drugs that aren't traceable.
Oh, there you go. It's those untraceable drugs. Just bringing the conspiracy theories early.
I don't think it's conspiracy theories. I think it's just the truth. Sorry. that chick that won that race, and she was like out of the water, had done a couple cartwheels, drank a beer, and then everyone else finished.
Oh, are you talking about Ledecky and her like 800 meter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, come on.
It was like
man.
A 10, 11 second.
It was 11 seconds. 11 seconds.
Yeah. That's insane.
I mean, that's not real. I'm sorry, but how can you be that much better? Like, I understand, like, there have been dominant athletes, but that is, I mean, seriously, that's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, look at Lance Armstrong. I mean, he won seven Tour de France.
Yeah, and he cheated.
You know, that's not very American talk of you, Jeff.
I'm sorry.
Suggesting that our best and brightest might be cheating.
My bad. I'm not saying they're all cheating. I'm sure they're not, but I just feel like there are some that are, and our drugs are better and not traceable yet.
So still, we're number one in Woo-hoo! Pharmaceuticals?
Well, you know, I'm okay with that.
I watched a few minutes. I saw the men's trampoline competition.
Ooh,
I didn't know
that
was a sport, but man, they jump really, really high.
You know, I had never watched rugby ever. And
really?
I watched a bunch of rugby this time, and I like rugby.
It was violent.
Two thumbs up rugby.
Yeah, I haven't caught the rugby, but I do.
Well,
I have seen it before.
It's
over.
It's over. Fiji won.
Really? Fiji?
Yeah, Fiji.
That's a little tiny dot of an island.
Yeah, but their people are like freaking enormous.
It's all that water they drink.
I don't know, maybe.
All that water that they don't drink because they ship it off to the rest of the world in those little bottles.
It was Fiji was gold. New Zealand was...
Yeah.
silver, I think, and then like
and Australia, Australia bronze.
I think it was Great Britain.
That's a rugby country. One of the best things I've ever seen in my life, I was watching a rugby match. This is probably 20 years ago, and it was Japan playing Scotland. And so you had these giant red-headed monsters of men, and you had these little tiny Japanese guys. And there was one play where this guy, he must have been like 6'5", was just simultaneously T-boned by two Japanese players who couldn't have been 5'3", probably between the two of them. Like, I think if they put a sat on each other's shoulders and put a trench coat on, they might have passed for normal height. And these two little Japanese guys just T-boned him and knocked all three of them out, like just dead on the field, had to be carried off in a cart. It was unbelievable.
I watched a match with Japan now, and it's not fair anymore because there was someone on the Japan team who was obviously of African descent, and he was like 6'3", 260 pounds.
Yeah, I think all the countries just recruit now.
Yeah, I don't think he's really Japanese. I'm just going to say that.
Well, you know, you do what you got to do to put those medal counts up on the board, right?
I guess. Anyway.
Hey, everybody, if you want to call in, leave a comment on our comment line. We would love to hear from you. We haven't heard from you guys in a while. We're getting lonely out here in internet land. Let us know that you are listening as Jeff shows us his blue moon on the webcam that you guys don't get to see because this is not a video podcast. But anyway, call our call-in line. That would be awesome. And that number, as always, is 317-643-1212. You get to talk to a robot the way God intended. Don't even have to talk to a human. So all of you people with social anxiety, relax. It is safe for you. If you want to subscribe to our newsletter, we might send another one of these days. I think we've sent one so far. You can do that at nobettershow.com/join. And lastly, if you want to support the show financially, that would be awesome. You can do that on Patreon, and that is at patreon.com/nobettershow. All right, well, what do you guys want to talk about tonight? Got some little stuff, got some longer stuff. Where do we want to jump in?
I'm just going to throw something out there that I did over the weekend. Just wanted to give a little shout out and really highly recommend it to other people, especially that are near Indiana or find a regional competition near you. But I went to, this is the second year in a row now, I've gone to the DCI finals, and DCI stands for Drum Corps International. And it's basically professional marching band, which sounds really geeky and stupid, but
I am telling you, man, these people are
just so freaking talented that it's not even funny. And if you get a chance, I know there are like regional competitions. I know there's one in Atlanta. There's one in Dallas. I'm sure there's some out in California. Indianapolis always hosts the finals every year because...
Well, DCI is headquartered here, right?
DCI is headquartered here in Indiana. But second year in a row that I've gone, my daughter has performed in a Indiana State Honor Band both years that performs before the finals. But we always stay and watch the finals, and I'm telling you, man, it is just insane. And, you know, just like anything else, when you're talking about competition at that level, they're just so head and shoulders above anything that you would normally see, including like the U.S. Marine Corps drum and bugle corps performed before, and it just makes them look pathetic, which is saying, so, oh gosh,
really?
I mean, seriously, not even close. It's just the amount of sound that these drum corps people get. It is just crazy.
I have it on good authority. Those tuba players are juicing.
Could be, and it's kind of funny. There's three drum corps that kind of vie for top place, and even in that, those three are so head and shoulders above the rest of the competition that, you know, and of course they are the ones that perform last. So you're staying until the very end to watch the best. But it is just, it's crazy good. Really, I mean, seriously, you should check it out. I mean, you can get tickets for, it's not cheap, but it's not like, you know, Alton Brown expensive, which is something else I wouldn't mind talking about. But I think our tickets were like $50. So, you know, not super cheap, but it was a whole, I mean, we got there at 5:30. We left at 11. So it's like a lot of entertainment for $50.
That's a lot of Sousa for your money.
No Sousa. There's no Sousa. No.
No.
It's not that kind of marching band.
You know, if they don't play Sousa, then I don't want to go. That's just all there is to it.
So yeah, anyway, if you get a chance, I know I talked about it last year, and I remember we had one of our listeners call in and talk about how much they love Drum Corps and gave us a couple recommendations. So that's been a year ago now.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's right.
I was not disappointed this year, and it was really good. The Drum Corps from Canton, Ohio, the Bluecoats won this year. So congratulations, Bluecoats. That's good stuff. Well,
I will have to put it on my calendar and try and remember to check that out next year. Very cool.
Hey, I've got a quick one that our listeners can relate to. Smart people tend to be lazier, says new study.
I'm the smartest person in the world.
I disagree. You're not nearly as smart as I am, buddy.
My wife would disagree.
There's an old quote, whenever I get the urge to exercise, I lie down until the feeling passes away. Mark Twain, perhaps, or a couple other people. But they did a study in the Journal of Health Psychology, and physical laziness is associated with being smart. Basically, it broke people down into high need for cognition and low need for cognition subjects. And basically, let's see, measures the tendency for an individual to engage in and enjoy thinking. So high need for cognition, you can sit there and think for a while, and then low need, you don't. And basically, the researchers noted that in earlier studies, low NFC individuals demonstrated a greater propensity toward boredom, more strongly experience its associated negative effect. And then high NFC individuals appear to avoid this because of their ability to provide their own mental stimulation. So high NFC individuals seem more content to entertain themselves mentally. Low NFC individuals quickly experience boredom and experience it more negatively. And they also noted that the difference was erased during the weekend. So during the week, low need for cognition people were more physically active, but the weekend it was balanced. Huh. So there you go.
Well, I think I'm not all that smart then. I think I'm just lazy and stupid because I'm content to just sit there and let life pass me by. I don't need anything to stimulate my brain. Just turn on that idiot box and I'm happy. That's kind of cool though. That is interesting. I saw an interesting one that Google Maps apparently is going to be adding parking information. I don't know if you guys had seen this. And when I say parking information, I don't mean like what Apple is doing where they drop a pin and say you parked here, but they are going to start using their enormous amount of knowledge and their database to a version that's coming out. I believe it is version 9.34 beta, which might be available now. I have not gone and looked, but it is going to attempt to base what it knows about the area that you're heading and give you parking information. Basically say the likelihood of finding a spot is going to be low, is going to be high, or is going to be medium. And apparently it will even give you adjustments to your time if it knows you are going someplace with a low availability of parking and its algorithms are calculating it's going to take 10 minutes to find parking, it's going to bump your back 10 minutes and say, hey, it's time to leave now because we know that you're going to have a hard time finding parking and we're going to add that 10 minutes into your destination. So they're not going to be able to say, hey, there's a spot over here, but they're going to use their fuzzy logic to say, we know it generally takes about 10 extra minutes this time of day in this location to find a spot to park. So that is coming soon, I believe, to everyone using Google Maps and available now in 9.34 beta. So, you know, check that out. That's kind of cool. Another good a good reason to give all of our vitals to Google so that we can have cool things like that. I am all in on Google knowing everything about me to make my life easier, as we have talked about in the past. And kind of a big story I saw this week. I don't know if you guys had seen the story that Facebook was going to be rolling out unblockable ads. They had said that ads are part of the experience. They are not optional, and they are going to make it so that you have to see them no matter what. And apparently within 48 hours of them rolling out their new AdBlock proof format, AdBlock Plus had cracked it and was once again you know, blissfully hiding all of the ads on Facebook. So it is now turning into a big cat and mouse to see who can change their technology faster. A Facebook spokesperson said, quote, "We are disappointed that ad blocking companies are punishing people on Facebook as these new attempts don't just block ads, but also block posts from friends and pages. This isn't a good experience for people, and we plan to address the issue." You know, I don't know about you guys, but first of all, I think that the number of people who run ad blockers is probably pretty low in the general Facebook using populace. But, you know, what do you guys, how do you guys feel about this? I mean, are you both ad block users? Where do you come down on this?
I have used ad block on my iOS device, just because I want quick and easy and everything, but on my home computers I don't use it. I mean, I and for me it's mostly, you know, I'm paying more for the bandwidth on mobile, and I just want things quick and fast when I'm on mobile. When I'm at home, I feel like, you know, I don't mind seeing an ad to pay for the sites that I want to go to. That's just me.
Yeah, fair enough. How about you, Todd?
I am not an ad block user. Kind of feel the same way as Jeff. I mean, mostly I'm just a free market guy and think, hey, advertising's part of it. That's how it's free for me. But I will opine that there's no way AdBlock blocks as much as Facebook's own algorithms from your feed.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, Facebook is continually tweaking what you see and how you see it, and you never know. I mean, you can't see the full fire hose of data coming through. And what's weird is I'll sometimes go weeks without seeing an update from a particular person, and then all of a sudden something will pop up and it'll tickle me, like, oh yeah, I haven't seen from that person in forever, and I click on it to see what's going on, and then all of a sudden they're like, I can't get them off my feed, and that's all I see is their updates. And you know, I don't necessarily know that I like that either, but I probably just don't Facebook.
I didn't see political stuff for a while, and of course now that's all I'm seeing in my feed. As the buzz around the election. And granted, I mean, I've clicked on a lot of those posts, so.
Well, and I mean, that too is also, you know, everyone seems to be posting stuff about, you know, their politician and what they think and what they feel. And I think that's not so much Facebook as just everyone has gone crazy with the election, so. But yeah, I don't know. So that's interesting. So you guys don't use it at home. I do. I am the dirty thief who wants all of his stuff for free and does not want to give the advertisers their due. And so I guess I'm part of the problem. But I think this illustrates my point. Among three technically savvy people, only one of us is regularly using an ad blocker. I don't think Facebook needs to worry in the greater scheme. I mean, I know my sister's not running an ad blocker. I know, you know, my wife doesn't have one on her computer. My parents aren't. They have no idea what an ad blocker is. I feel like we're a very, very small percentage of the population. So I don't know. I thought that was an interesting article. You guys have any that you want to jump in and talk about?
Yeah, I want to throw one in. I got this from a listener who emailed it in. It's been a couple weeks ago, but we just haven't had a chance to bring it up. Listener John sent me an information about Microsoft's Bing is finally making a profit. For the fiscal year end that ended June 30th for Microsoft, Bing brought in $5.5 billion in revenue, which is way, 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 way less than Google's $52 billion in comparison. However, wow. It was the first year ever Bing showed a profit, and people are considering this important because Microsoft is now having to back off on the growth potential of Windows 10, saying that they were originally going to meet a billion devices by 2018. They've backed that off. So the fact that Bing has become profitable is you know, offsetting some of that problem with penetrating with Windows 10. Interestingly, both Apple and Amazon have made Bing the default search assistant. So,
right,
you know,
huh? So did the article happen to mention what their profit is on $5 billion in revenue?
It did not say that, and I that shocked me. But I read the entire article. It was from Motley Fool, and yeah, okay. No, it doesn't say. It just said that it was profitable. So I'm guessing not by much, but it had just been a loss, a huge loss to them year after year. So any profit is way better than it has been in the past. So.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I've always heard that Microsoft had treated Bing as a loss leader as a, well, we're going to compete in search and we're never going to make any money. So that is kind of a big deal that they've made any profit at all.
Yeah. So,
I think I had heard that they were going to miss their projected 1 billion devices, but I hadn't heard by how much. And I'm curious if that hurts them. I mean, are people excited about Windows 10 in general? I mean, we're moving to it at work because we have to, but
you know, that's interesting to hear that
most people I know at home
that they're
have
moving
it.
We're not moving to it at work. So that's interesting that you guys are, but we are definitely not moving to it at work. So,
oh yeah, no, we, our team being a technical team has been the guinea pigs. I've had a Windows 10 machine now for several months and, you know, honestly, it seems to work fine. I don't know that I've run into anything that it doesn't do that Windows 7 did, and there's some more access control stuff which makes things a little bit more difficult, but that's also big IT locking things down and preventing people from doing, you know, stupid things with their computer, even though I'm smarter than everybody there, darn it. I should be able to do anything I want to on my computer. But that's the way it goes. Yeah, that's interesting. And I don't know that I never intentionally go to Bing, but I also never change. Like, I use the search results on my iPhone, and whatever comes back, sure, comes back.
And I mean, so, you know, Alexa is very much a Bing person, so, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know you mentioned that you were not using Alexa a ton, but I really, in the last few weeks, have started using her a lot more. So, I don't know, give it another try, because I think the Amazon Echo is a handy device, especially if you have it near your kitchen. I was cooking today, I set timers, it reminded me, it played classic rock, it was pretty awesome. I'm just going to throw that out there.
She still tells me jokes every day. That's been about it.
Apparently, it has a new bartender feature that you can add, a skill that you can then ask it to tell you how to make a drink or suggest a random drink. I don't know if you tell it what you have on hand and it concocts a drink from that, or if you just say, hey, give me a recipe list for a random drink. But if you're sitting there and you want a Tom Collins, you can ask it for a Tom Collins, and it'll tell you how to make a Tom Collins. And if I say Tom Collins one more time, I get a commission.
Step one.
I would just program it.
Step two, right. Drink Blue Moon.
Yes.
Summer honey. I like a good Blue summer Moon. Honey wheat.
But, you know, you didn't shove an orange down in there, so you lose points for that.
I don't
that.
Need to because it's summer honey wheat.
Not, it doesn't matter. It still needs an orange.
No.
You got to have
no.
it.
No, that's
you
only,
yeah. You need some
that's only
citrus.
Belgian white that needs the orange.
That's right. This is not a Belgian white.
Every beer does better with an orange,
okay,
in my opinion.
Well, there you go.
No? All right. I'm not a beer guy. I'm going to go get a bottle of whiskey, though. Darn right. So I saw an interesting article about a week ago that I thought I'd bring up, because it's crazy to me that this is actually advice that is being put out there by police departments. And it basically, they are recommending that people store their car keys in the microwave or the refrigerator to prevent car theft in the age of keyless remotes. So there are actually police departments out there that have put out memos to their citizens to store their car keys inside of a device that will block RF signals. Because apparently there have been waves of car thieves, especially in California, using a power amplifier. And apparently you just pull up outside of somebody's house with this power amplifier. It hears electronically over radio frequency the keys inside, amplifies the signal enough so that the car thinks that you're standing next to the car with the key. And boop, it unlocks the locks. You can get in. You can, you know, rob the car. And nobody is any the wiser until they go back out to the car the next day. So they are saying that one of the best ways to block yourself against these would-be hackers is to keep your vehicle keys in a place that blocks radio frequency signals. Hence the recommendation of storing them in a microwave, a refrigerator, a metal box. Apparently, companies make special Faraday cages cost you anywhere from $25 to $300 online that you keep your keys in to thwart these high-tech burglars. And they also recommend parking in your garage to act as a physical barrier. But, you know, like, we've got our garage full of stuff because we've been working on the house. So our cars are sitting outside. Now, fortunately, ours are old and dumb enough that they don't have them fancy key fobs. But I know most people, I mean, like, all new cars seem to have those, you know, proximity key fobs. And yeah, apparently it's not a big deal to amplify that signal, and the car just opens for you. So I thought that was really
interesting. I smell a new product line from the Container Store.
Yeah, just aluminum foil lined a plastic container. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, like, I have liked our local police department on social media, and we get a lot of notifications that pop up about vehicle break-ins, petty theft, and a lot of people in our area leave their cars in the driveway. They don't lock them, and there's all kinds of stories about cars getting, you know, ransacked and any valuables taken out of them, change and electronics. And not only that, but people using the garage door openers to open the garage door and then steal tools and things like that. I never even really thought about that. I guess I'm just a good enough person that the thought never crossed my mind, but now I have to make a conscious decision to remember to lock my car in my own driveway. And yeah, so yeah, that's another tip for you too, is keep your car locked up, apparently. What else do we have here? I know you have got a big long one, Todd. I know Jeff has got to jump off a little early today. I'm not sure how long your story is going to take. So I don't know if you want to jump into that one or if we want to talk about some other smaller ones first.
Go ahead and jump in.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and we'll just get through it. So
all right, let's get through it.
So we didn't get any feedback on limiting Pokemon Go. So here's yet another Pokemon Go story. And this is
Jeff is in heaven.
Let me check and make sure. Let's see if there's anything I need to catch. No,
there you go.
Okay.
It's a couple weeks old, but it's Spirits in the Material World by Grant Williams. He writes a newsletter called Things That Make You Go Home. And unfortunately, it is a proprietary newsletter, so this is not something that you can just go find. We won't be able to link it, and it also is relatively expensive, but. He talked about this phenomenon of Pokemon Go, and of course it does relate to stock prices and such, but I wanted to ask you guys a trivia question. What year was Nintendo founded?
Oh, gosh. It's an old company. They used to make playing cards, I think.
That is exactly right. Very good.
I'm going to say, it's like turn of the century. I'm just like 1890s, early 1900s.
I'm going to go post-war. I'm going to say 1952.
Jacob, you just missed it. 1889.
There you go. I knew it was an old, old company, but I didn't know it was quite that old.
By Fusahiro Yamauchi. And it's...
Now, I have no idea why that knowledge is in my head.
Because you're such an expert Pokemon Go player.
Nerd. I still have not downloaded Pokemon Go on anything. No device.
You realize, like, that hurts me a little bit because I walked, you know, around in the area where I happen to know that you work, and it is just laden. with Pokestops and Pokemon. It hurts.
I've heard it's hard to ride a bike around the canal now because everybody's walking a few steps and then stopping suddenly because they're all looking at their phones. Anyway.
Yeah, nope, sorry.
It's got a rich history steeped in product lines ranging from its original business, Hanafuda Playing Cards. And taxis, TV network, instant noodles, and even love hotels.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, I want some Nintendo noodles in the
Pikachu.
As he points out, that's a peculiarly Japanese institution, which, well, if you want to know, Google away, people. By the way,
Japanese companies tend to be.
wait till you're at work tomorrow.
Japanese love hotel. Okay.
Japanese companies tend to be really, really diversified like that, though.
That's true.
I mean, that's not
typically
uncommon.
They're big conglomerates.
Yeah.
Nintendo entered the toy market in 1966 with Ultra Hand, and this was created by company's maintenance engineer Gunpa Yokoi. It allowed you to pick up stuff 2 feet away without moving those 2 feet. How great is that? I'm picturing the little things that you get, you know, like the shark head or whatever that you squeeze down. I'm assuming that's what that is. But
Yeah, like a little gripper pole.
They entered the video game market in 1974, and they secured the Japanese distribution rights for the Magnavox Odyssey video game console. Okay. They hired a young developer to build its own proprietary video game business, and this person would find himself working for the creator of the Ultra Hand. So now we jump to Donkey Kong in 1981, and they've had plenty of innovation, surges in profits and share price, and mistakes which have dampened those profits and corrected that share price in a hurry. The SNES became the biggest selling console of the 16-bit era, and it battled it out with Sega Genesis, Super Mario, and Sonic the Hedgehog were going head-to-head. You guys remember those days?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I invested in the Sega, and I lost out.
Me too. Same thing. So as they rolled out the Super NES, Nintendo had spent the previous 3 years working behind the scenes with another Japanese company you may have heard of, Sony, developing a CD-ROM attachment for the cartridge-based SNES console.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, well, the plug-in attachment would be, in the words of the two companies, a station of play.
I see what happened there.
Almost a PlayStation, if you will.
Don't jump ahead. The only remaining sticking point was how the revenue and rights were going to be shared, with Nintendo claiming, with their all-conquering game console, Sony was nothing, and Sony claiming that Nintendo's cartridges would inevitably bow down to the might of a CD-ROM. Unfortunately for Nintendo, at the 1991 CES, Sony unveiled something they called the SNES PlayStation as a prototype, sending Nintendo executives into a fury and causing them, in a fit of pique, to cancel their deal with Sony and announce a similar R&D project with Philips just one day later.
Wow, I don't remember that at all. That's interesting.
So, as he points out, not sure how much strategic thought went into that, but it accomplished two important things. It aligned Nintendo with Philips, the Ringo Starr of the consumer entertainment world, as Mr. Williams says. And it pissed off Sony so much that they decided to forge ahead into the gaming world without Nintendo. And to do so with a point to prove, because, you know, face is so important in Japan, and Sony had a decent amount of egg placed on theirs. The battle lines were well and truly drawn. So Sony launches the 32-bit PlayStation in December 1994, just as the SNES was reaching a saturation point, and with its additional processing power, the PlayStation revolutionized the gaming market, quickly becoming the first console in history to sell over 100 million units and giving Sony a level of dominance that was unchallenged until Nintendo got its act together. No, until Microsoft launched the Xbox in 2000. Developers and publishers embraced the PlayStation, leaving Nintendo to persevere largely with in-house material and its cartridge system. Philips, that didn't really pan out.
That's interesting. Wow. Well,
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Please continue.
Interrupt, because this is a long article.
No, that's okay, because what I had to say is more current time, so keep going, okay. And I'll throw my two cents in at the end.
Well, let's see here. So in 2000, Nintendo demonstrated they learned their lesson with the cartridge-based system, and the GameCube was released, except it used CD-ROM-based media that was smaller than the major competitors to curb piracy, supposedly.
And I want to point this out because it's a little known fact about the GameCube. The discs also spun backwards to further make it just a cluster of a system to
support. But it went the front way in Australia.
That's right. In Australia, it was the right way, but everywhere else, it was the wrong way around. It was a weird format.
Yeah, and the smaller discs just meant they had less room, and even more crucially, DVD playback was not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems like that was obvious to everyone except Nintendo executives. They also skewed the internet. Microsoft and Sony rolled out Xbox Live, PlayStation Network. Nintendo first chose to shun internet connectivity altogether before almost begrudgingly releasing friend codes, which I have never heard of before. Uh-huh. Long strings of numbers and letters designed to absolutely ensure that you only ever played online with people that you knew.
Huh, yeah, that doesn't even ring a faint bell.
And then the big blow, Final Fantasy. So Square was the developer of the best-selling series, had agreed to release Final Fantasy VII exclusively on the eagerly anticipated Nintendo 64 when it debuted in 1995. But with Nintendo sticking to their guns on the debate between cartridges and discs, they discovered that there simply wasn't enough storage on the N64 cartridges to be able to run the game. And they it even says that they you couldn't even render the lead protagonist Cloud Strife's luxuriant hair on an entire N64 cartridge. So they made it for the PlayStation.
Interesting.
And then they sold 10 million copies that Nintendo didn't get. However, one area where Nintendo is absolutely dominated is handheld gaming. Not mobile, but handheld. It began with Game & Watch in 1980 and morphed into Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and the 2004 launch of the Nintendo DS. So this was going to be their savior. The president, Satoru Iwata, placed a heavy burden on the DS development team in an interview with Nikkei Shimbun when he said this about the soon-to-be-launched project. The DS represents a critical moment for Nintendo's success over the next 2 years. If it succeeds, we rise to the heavens. If it fails, we sink into hell. And luckily for Nintendo, it was a huge success. Go ahead, Jacob. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, I think that it was by its time a success, but you don't really see DS, you don't see those out there at all now. I mean, mobile gaming is really all on, well, portable gaming is all on mobile devices now, and Nintendo is missing the boat big time on that.
Yes and yeah, no. Yes and no. Portable gaming is still fairly big with kids. I mean, yeah,
like DSs and DSs all of
for
that.
Sure.
Interesting.
I hear about kids talk about it. I haven't seen one myself, but I know that they're out there.
So, you know, both of my sons have them. I actually, my son talked me into start playing a Pokemon game on a handheld. So I actually spent a great part of today playing Pokemon on a handheld. So, I mean, they do still exist, really? But they are few and far between.
Interesting.
So that was in 04, and then the second half of 06 came the Wii, which most people have heard about, and that one sold over 100 million units. After that, after the Wii release, the stock price for Nintendo tripled and peaked in December 2007. Now, Nintendo remained wedded to their core characters and their core philosophy. Despite the innovation for the Wii that went for family-friendly, casual gamers instead of those of the hardcore variety, could be relied on to continually buy new games from multiple developers. And Mr. Williams says that continued their track record of a winning idea, moving before anybody else, but not allowing them to take advantage of the innovation that they created. In 2011, here's how the company viewed the idea of mobile gaming. This is absolutely not under consideration. If we did this, Nintendo would cease to be Nintendo. Having a hardware development team in-house is a major strength. It's the duty of management to make use of those strengths. It's probably the correct decision in the sense that the moment we started to release games on smartphones, we'd make profits. However, I believe my responsibility is not to short-term profits, but to Nintendo's mid- and long-term competitive strength.
I mean, I know that the Japanese plan for the long, long term, but that seems like missing the boat because of the pace at which technology changes. You can't have a 20-year plan with technology changing every 6 to 12 to 18 months as rapidly as it does.
Yeah, I think this is what I wanted to talk about. I mean, I think that Nintendo needs to pivot and become a software company and rely on its properties because, you know, ultimately... And they can still build hardware. I don't want to say that they can't, because there is something to be said for the gaming experience of their controllers on their handheld devices. They are good. They're well made. Mm-hmm. They don't break. I mean, we have a DS Color that still works. When you know, Tom was talking about all those we're talking about like really old, a Game Boy Color. I mean, we're talking really old, still works. So, you know, I think that if I were running Nintendo, which I'm not, and they're not asking me, but what I would do if I were them, I would create some kind of controller-like device that a smartphone would snap into, and then you would use that controller and buy their mobile games for your phone. And then,
sure,
you know, make that available for people that are worried about having that sense of controller. I mean, I know my son says he doesn't want, you know, Pokemon to come out just on the phone. He wants the controller feel. So make that controller for those hardcore fans that are interested in that. But then you would still get the revenue from all the people who would just buy it just and play it just on their phone. I mean, I don't think that DSs or consoles are really in Nintendo's future, but that's, you know,
No. And I mean, there's precedent because you can buy Bluetooth game controllers for smartphones and tablets today out of China. And I mean, so the technology is certainly there and in the market already. It would be trivial for Nintendo to capitalize on it. And I'm not going to buy a DS and carry a DS around, but if I could get Super Mario Brothers or, you know, a VR enabled Duck Hunt on my Mario smartphone, Kart. I would shove my money at them as fast as
Mario
I could.
Mario Karts like through online with your friend. Oh God, dude,
that would be awesome.
It would be so amazing.
Just take my money.
Absolutely.
Take it.
So let's put a pin in that hardware thing. We're going to come back to that. Okay. Let's see. So let's talk about the launch. So in 7 days, it got to over 7 million downloads, and he's got a chart here, 7.2 million for Pokemon Go. This is 7 days from launch. 2.2 for Angry Birds 2, 2.2 million. 1.8 million for Candy Crush Jelly Saga. 1.7 million for Clash Royale. So, you know, way higher than any previous release.
A million downloads and a day.
More online concurrent users than Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Holy cow. I had not heard that fact.
That's why, talked about this.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that's why their servers kept crashing, by the way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Investors quickly jumped on the game's success, bid up the stock price, adding $15.1 billion to Nintendo's market cap. And he points out that, a guy named Daniel Marcillo pointed out to him that meant the market had bestowed a higher value on what it perceived to be Nintendo's windfall from Pokemon Go than it did Deutsche Bank, which is a huge German bank that is really struggling right now.
Wow.
Of course, you had to really dig deep to discover that Nintendo actually owns a 1/3 stake in the Pokemon company alongside their partners Game Freak and Creatures. And by digging deep, he means Wikipedia.
doing the hard research.
And adding to the confusion is the fact that Nintendo neither developed nor published Pokemon Go either. The company those of us choosing to walk the streets of the world with our eyes looking forwards instead of at our phone screens have to thank for that is called Niantic, a Google spinout. If you didn't notice, Mr. Williams is also not a Pokemon Go player, just like Jacob.
Well, but I don't think it's any secret that Niantic is the developer behind this, and they're, you know, they've done a licensing deal. But so how are they monetizing it? Because obviously, you know, stock price and market cap are one thing, but it's free to download it. Are there in-app purchases for the game?
Oh, yeah.
So they are making microtransactions, and that's how they're monetizing.
Yes. Did you guys know that Pokemon Go was the result of an April Fool's joke?
I did know
from 2014.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No.
So one of the April Fool's jokes that Google did was around Google Maps. I think Todd said it was 2014. That sounds about right.
2014.
They had an April Fool's thing where you could search on Google Maps and find Pokemon and catch them. By the way, caught them all because, you know, it's...
Well, of course
you did.
But yeah, that's what it kind of came out of. It was an April Fool's joke that someone said, you know, we own this Niantic, because at that time, Niantic was still owned by Google. So that's when they started.
Huh. I did not know that. That's interesting. That is really interesting. So who owns this then? Like, I mean, what is Nintendo's ultimate cut once you factor in? I mean, because obviously Apple and Google are taking a cut from the microtransactions, and this Pokemon Go company has to be taking something. Like, how's this money getting divvied
up? They'll get a third after, you know, Google and Apple take their 30%. So they'll get, of the remaining 70%, it's split between Niantic and the Pokemon Company.
Well, and then the problem with that is so Niantic is still a majority owned by Alphabet. Mm-hmm. So
really, Google's really getting more than 30%. Google's going to be
getting way, way, way more than Nintendo is on this.
Interesting. But Nintendo's getting something that they desperately need, which is cash for a property that's otherwise sitting.
Yeah, they have a new Pokemon series of games coming out this fall. So this is going to, I would assume, help them significantly on the sale of that game. I mean, I think it comes out in November, the new Pokemon games. So I got to assume that this is going to be a huge bump. And you have to have the latest, Nintendo handheld device to play that. So it's probably going to bump up those sales for them as well. I think. I mean, it has to some, right?
Now, were those games in the pipeline before Pokemon Go, or has this been this has gone crazy, let's hurry up and get this
Pokemon
out the door?
is very much a pipeline game that it comes out every two or three years, a new version comes out. So this has been in the pipeline for some time, but this timing cannot hurt them. Although one would argue that if it would have out like in August, that would have been, even better, right? Because, it has already started dying down some.
Plus, they're going to get the revenue from Pokemon Go Plus, which is a Bluetooth-enabled accessory which helps you catch Pokemon.
Which was supposed to come out in July.
Well, of course there's one of those.
But it was supposed to come out in July, and it got pushed back to September.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's a huge slip-up because, I can tell you just from the fact that it hasn't died down for me. And I still do my walks, that the number of people that I'm seeing out there playing the game is drastically dropped. Drastically. I still see people playing, but I used to see groups of huge people sitting around and playing. Now you see maybe two or three instead of 20. So it is drastically dropped.
Well, it's the ooh shiny effect. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's going to be true of anything. And it's, it does take more effort than sitting on your couch and playing. So, I mean, it's amazing that it did what it did, in my opinion, with, because we're all so smart, remember? interesting.
So don't lose track of, they couldn't get a simple $33 Bluetooth gadget to the market when they said they were going to.
Yeah, that's
hardware that they've lost a lot of money on.
Well, and they're ostensibly a hardware company.
And let's go real quick to there's a chart or a little graphic that talks about the monetization. So this was a Forbes survey, and it was almost 100,000 people that responded to the poll. Not scientific, but something that they put online and got 100,000, pretty good sample. How much time each day do you spend playing Pokemon Go at work? 32%, I don't play at work. Less than 10 minutes, 10%, 10 to 30 minutes, 14%, 30 minutes to an hour, 12%, more than an hour, 32%.
Wow. So
but then there's the next slide.
Does that mean when they say at work, does that mean like during like working time, or I play during my day, but it's when I'm on lunch or I'm walking to a meeting? So I'm not really taking really work time away. So I don't know how I would answer that question.
Yeah, I don't think that was defined in the question that I know of.
Because I probably technically play an hour as well, but I work on a campus where there's, I think, 29 different buildings. So if I have a meeting over at that building over there, I'm going to play on my way there, but I'm not going to like walk away from my desk and not work so that I can play Pokemon. So I don't know. Anyway, okay, go ahead. Sorry.
How much money have you spent playing Pokemon Go was another question, and 79% said zero.
Wow, that's. But
I'm not in that 79%. I know we talked about on. I'm such a loser.
Well, I know we talked about on this show, and it's been quite a few episodes back now, that of the free to what do they call it, the freemium game model games, that it's usually a tiny, tiny percentage of people, like typically less than 5%, that almost completely subsidize gameplay for everyone else.
Yeah.
That's- so the fact that, that you're talking almost 30% of people have paid is huge in the freemium game world.
It says 12%, another 12%, $1 to $10, and then the rest, either 10 to 50 or 3% only was $50 plus.
Yeah, I mean, those are
huge
numbers.
I refuse to comment on the grounds that it might tend to incriminate me.
Oh, go on. Your wife doesn't listen to this podcast.
I'm not going to tell you. I'm a little ashamed.
Okay, so it's not your wife. You're just afraid of getting ridiculed by us. Could you have made a car payment?
No, I'm not that crazy. I was an accounting major.
Could you have bought a new case for your phone? So somewhere between a case and a car payment.
The last thing I wanted to point out about this article is apparently the Wii U console sales have been way under what they forecast. Yeah. And I have to admit, before I read this article, I had never heard of the Wii U.
Wow.
And keep in mind that I am, while I don't, you know, I have an Xbox One and I'm mostly a PC gamer, but I am in the hardcore gaming camp and I hadn't even heard of this.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's just, it kind of was a follow-on. I think it was a day late and a dollar short. I know the big thing that it brought was HD, which they never had any mechanism to upgrade the Wii and give it HD. But I think the Wii, I don't want to misspeak, I'm going to say it anyway, and I've not checked my sources, but I think the Wii U is still only 720p. So, I mean, they're really missing the boat. As a hardware company, they're not even putting, you know, two-spec hardware out there, I don't believe. And I don't know anyone who's a gamer that has a Wii U. So, Jeff's raising his hand.
Yeah, he has a Wii U.
Is that true? Is it only 720?
No, I think it's only 720. I would not swear to that either, because it doesn't really matter.
Oh, apparently it's native 720 and it will upscale to 1080p, but it is interpolated.
But I will tell you that it we do enjoy it. I mean, we like it. It's fun. But we play the games that are, you know, we play Mario Kart. We play, you know, the Pokemon franchise stuff. We play, you know, the Mario Brothers franchise stuff. That's all we use it for. But we do use it. We do. Yeah.
Are there other franchises that, besides Nintendo, like Keystone franchises that put out Wii U games?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can buy any game for Wii U base. I mean, any of the big,
oh, really?
Quote unquote, big games. I mean, you know, the Madden, you know, whatever version of Madden and all, you know, all those games come out on the Wii U. We don't own a single one of them. We buy those for the Xbox One. You know, there are shoot 'em up banging bang games for the Wii U as well, but we never buy those. I mean, we only buy the games that are
that you can't get on an Xbox or a PlayStation. The Nintendo property games. Which is what people want. And this is interesting. As of June 30th of this year, Nintendo apparently has reported sales of 13.02 million consoles, which that's not very many. And they have reported sales of 88.72 million software units worldwide. So, again, I mean, you've got some of the big name, you know, like the Halos, and I don't really know what the equivalent to Halo is on the PlayStation side, but, I mean, those sell tens of millions of units just by themselves.
One other quick note, from July 7th to July 20th, they measured the Pokemon Go active daily users, and it did peak at July 14th. I don't know what it's done since then. Of course, I think new countries are rolling out, but to Jeff's point earlier, it probably is on the wane.
It is on the wane. I can guarantee you that it is definitely on the wane. And I know that's just a very small statistical sample, but I can tell you that, I mean, it is night and day different. I mean, the first couple weeks that it was out, it was insane. Like, the number of people that you would see just sitting around, hanging out, playing Pokemon, it was crazy. And, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't people still out. There are. I saw some people today when I was walking around and playing today. But it's just not like what it was.
It's not 200 people on the canal playing like it was three weeks ago.
40 people, which is still great, but it's not like what it was.
Right. So what is Nintendo's move here? What do they do to continue to capitalize on this? Is there any speculation or thoughts on that?
My only speculation is what you guys alluded to. I mean, they have wonderfully popular characters. They need to license them. They need to make the money on licensing characters to either other companies or other mobile games or however they do it. It should be a slam dunk.
Yeah, you would think so. And I'm going to put this out there because this is the million-dollar idea. I'm sure I'm not the only person who's ever thought of this, but I'm giving it out there to whoever owns the characters within Nintendo. Make me an augmented reality, a VR Duck Hunt that I can play like Pokemon Go, where I'm walking along and ducks fly up out and I point my phone and track them and shoot them, and I will give you my money. I will just take my wallet and throw it at my phone because that would be freaking amazing. That would be so much
fun. Here's a little bit of... no better than average trivia for you. I don't know if any of you, either of you remember Nintendo Power Magazine.
So I do.
I held the record for Duck Hunt for 4.5 months.
Woohoo. Oh, that's wow. Right. This guy, I don't think I ever held a record.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Your jobs, listeners, are to go track down a copy of Jeff Nintendo Chang. Power yeah. with Jeff in it. I want to see
it's
this.
It's out there. I'm telling you. I remember getting that Nintendo and hanging up the Intellivisions, you know, over in the corner. I've had console gaming forever. So, yeah. Yeah. Duck Hunt.
That's cool. That was me. I'm going to have to go search my microfiche at the library. I want to see this.
4 episodes, buddy. Or I mean, four, that's awesome. four issues.
Four yep. issues. Very cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I hope Nintendo can figure it out because, I mean, they do have some incredible franchises and characters, and it would be a shame for them to just, you know, quietly go away, especially considering how freaking old the company is.
Well, maybe they could go back to playing cards.
I don't know if they will.
There you go.
Maybe they make a darn nice pack of playing cards. I don't know. I don't buy anything but bicycle. Is there anything
else?
How
about American Love Hotel?
Hey, Wikipedia has a pretty good article about Love Hotels, just in case you were wondering.
You know, I am happily married, and I am not going to say otherwise
on
the air.
You can go with your wife. Like, you should see some of the elaborate designs for in the Love Hotels.
Oh, sure.
You might be able to rent ball gags and latex. I'm not saying you can. Just saying you might be able to.
Plus, you can play a lot of card games while you're there, too.
Yes, you could. I can't believe I'm actually clicking on a Wikipedia article that is titled Love Hotel. That's nice. Oh, look, they're in South Korea and Thailand, too.
I'm stunned, really.
Shocker. Yeah, no. Well, yeah, that is interesting stuff, Todd.
Very
that's
cool.
Very cool. So I know, Jeff, you said that you have to wrap it up.
A long
so
time ago.
why don't we start wrapping it up so that you can go on to your family stuff? I think Todd, what is it that you love this
week?
Yeah,
so because I highlighted such a good, expensive newsletter, I wanted to also point out one that's free. And that's Thoughts from the Frontline by John Malden. It's you can find it at maldeneconomics.com. And it's a well-written, approachable, general, global financial newsletter. And what I'm saying is, if you hear some of this crazy stuff that you know on the news or CNBC, and you want to find out what's going on in the world of global finance, spend a few minutes, you know, 15, 30 minutes, and read Thoughts from the Frontline from John Malden. It's really good. It's really well written, and it's not full of a whole bunch of financial terms. So it's a good way to get educated quickly. And they got a couple other free things at the website too. So
And I think you've referenced them in stories before.
Yeah, the Patrick Cox writes the Tech Digest, which is a free publication by them. They have paid newsletters as well. Obviously, they're in the business of financial newsletters. But Thoughts from the Frontline, he has another one called Out of the Box. They're really good financial explanations of some of the things that are going on and what may be happening. What are central banks doing? What's quantitative easing? Why are they doing that? That kind of thing. So give it a look if you have any interest in finance.
I just went and signed up literally right now. So I am going to become more educated. It's going to be good. I can just feel it. I'm going to start getting all accounting up in here.
I am
I'll
way
be wrong.
Too intelligent to go click on something.
I clicked on it and I gave them my information. It was weird. They wanted my bank account and routing number too. I just figured that was part of it.
Earlier. I'm way
it's all encrypted. Don't worry.
Oh, you're way too intelligent. Yes. I am not, apparently.
Jacob, what do you love?
So what I love is the Your Power. I don't know. It's some garbage out of China, but it's really cool. It is a cell phone clip-on camera lens, and I'm going to hold it up for the guys to see. I can't do that at home. But the thing is honking huge. I mean, like, you can see it is big. It's like 2 inches across, and it is an inch and a half tall, and it's just got a little springy chip clip thing on the back, and it goes over the camera lens on your cell phone. I caught it on sale on the Amazon deal of the day about a week ago for like $9 and some change, and I think you can get it now for just under $16. I looked right before we started recording. I think it was $15.99. It gives you a really nice wide angle. It's a 0.45 magnification, and it gives you also a 10x macro. And the fact that it is so big, I have a little tiny one somewhere that I had actually lost for quite a long time, which is why I bought this one. And then, of course, the day after I placed the order for this one, my wife found the other one and put it on my desk. And then when this one came, she said, "Why on earth did you buy that? You're never going to use it. That was a waste of money. And look, there's your other one," to which I had no defense except, "But it's shiny and I like it."
It was a good deal.
It's not a bag. That's true. It was a good deal. None of this matters, of course. I still got the stern, you know, you should know better look. But whatever. It is what it is. Like I said, because it actually seems to be pretty decent glass. I mean, it's not going to, you know, you're not going to take any Olympic photos like I saw of the cameras for the Usain Bolt qualifier. It doesn't really, it does have barrel distortion on the wide angle. They almost all do, but you really don't get any vignetting and there's no fall off at the edges. So you actually get a pretty nice wide angle. And if you're doing landscape stuff, it doesn't look distorted. It's just if you're shooting, you know, straight lines and things like that. And the macro works really well. It's a nice little lens. I've played with it. I've taken some photos this weekend and, you know, I don't know that I'm going to take it with me everywhere I go, but I'm going to stick it in that bag that I talked about last week. And odds are I'm going to have it more than I'm not going to have it with me. And like they say, the best camera is the one that you have with you. It's a nice little accessory. You know, if you watch for it and you can get it for $10 or heck, even $15.99, it's pretty nice. And it should work on any phone that has a camera on the back. It is not iPhone specific. It should work with a Galaxy, OnePlus One, any of those. So maybe check it out. I'll put a link to it. It's pretty cool. That's what I love. Jeff, how about you?
So I know, I don't know what episode, but one of the past episodes, I recommended a four-port USB hub manufactured by Anker. I've been having some problems mm-hmm. with that specific one, especially if I have more than one hard drive plugged into it. It just tends to make my computer think, yeah, I don't want to recognize either of them. So I did some reading at some reviews on Amazon and picked out this one called the Sambrent 4-port USB 3 hub. It has an individual power adapter as well, so it does a really good job of charging different accessories, as well as just being a 4-port USB 3.0 hub. Since I have bought it, I've been using it about a month now. Haven't had a single problem with having multiple drives and you know, other things plugged into it with no problems. So the cool. Anker, you know, Anker worked pretty well for 2 or 3 months, so we'll see how this one holds up. I'll give you an update maybe in 4 or 5 months, but so far this one is performing like a champ. The Anker one's not so much anymore, so that I do really enjoy it. It's pretty nice, so that's what
very,
I love.
Very cool.
So I guess
I have a Sabrent what is it? Plugs into a hard drive, plugs into a USB port. What do you call
I
that?
I know what you're
I'm
talking
stupid.
About. Yeah,
and it works great. I mean, I actually use that to SSD boot my my Mac Mini. Works like a champ. That Sabrent stuff's nice stuff, and it was only like $10.
So check that out if you need a USB hub. I guess we'll wrap it up here. Again, we do have a call in comment line. If you want to rant about that, we should not be talking about Pokemon Go. Please give us a call 317-643-1212. If you don't rant about it, we're going to continue to talk about it. So there you go. If you want to follow up and keep in touch with us on Twitter, we are at No Better Show. Our blog is available at www.nobettershow.com. Please feel free to send us an email at feedback@nobettershow.com. If you could take some time, go over to iTunes, rate and review us. We would appreciate that. That goes a long way to making us accessible and visible to other users. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. And now you should know better than average too. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Have a great week, everyone.
Talk at you later, everyone.